recognize you.
Yeah. Yes, go. Thank you.
It's a kind of feeling. I don't hear many of them have been the fool.
Oh.
I think it's worth getting you.
Yes.
How are you today, Miss Lewis?
Oh, very well. Very well indeed. Very well. I'm very pleased to hear you come through. Come along, friend. You can hear you quite well.
I got that difficult bus I speak. You know you see.
Yes? Oh.
Me singing those tapes out.
Yeah.
Aye. I bet that keeps you pretty busy one way and another now.
It does, yeah.
Aye.
And also do transcriptions as well, you
think? And you write it down and get it typed out, is that what you mean?
Yes.
I should imagine you have a very big correspondence for me and Alan getting these things out and about.
Yes,
we
do.
Oh, we do.
That's
quite a big correspondence.
That's quite a room that I got there.
I can see
it. If you were to move, that's what they're talking about. You're going to have quite a bit of stuff to shift and get organized.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's no joke.
Yeah, a little man.
Who's David speaking? Hey, David's that's the name you can call me by, David.
David, haven't you been before, David?
A long time back now. At least I think so. I think this time business is always a problem, but I think it was quite a while since I last came and spoke to you. Mm-hmm. How are you now? Are you better now?
Oh, yes,
you
I'm
were
all
very
there.
Sick at one time.
Yes.
You know, you were really run down.
Yes, an operation, you see.
I heard all about that. You had a pretty bad time.
Yes.
You're all right now.
Yes.
That's some good attention and care that you get, I expect, from the lady.
Yes.
You've been very good this summer,
so, really. Well, you see, summer's hardly started yet.
The
problem
is, you've been really quite good.
And what are you doing, David, on that side?
Rescue work most of the time.
Rescue work?
That's been my main interest, helping people over. Quite often, you know, you get side cases of souls who are in really great need, and they're very close to earth and earthbound, held down by thoughts and things, you know, attachments and all that, you know. And of course, you get some of these young people come here, they're very resentful, some of them, of being taken away from earth. Their mind is full of material things, and it's not always easy to get them to sort of adjust themselves, and then they're clean to their homes and that sort of thing, and parents and friends, and you get some of these terrible things, you know, that happen with people sent over here, you know, it's like being in your world 1 minute and the next thing they're out of the body, you know, and they're still sort of in a way attached to the body, clinging to things, you know.
Yeah.
Like, so you get someone killed in a car crash, you know. It all happens so quick. And before you can see Jack Robinson, they're out of the body and they can see what's happened. Mm-hmm. And at first they don't realize it's themselves that they don't always cotton on to these things straight away. Some do, of course, but it's always problematic. They feel that they're trying to get back, you know, sometimes into the body. It's very difficult. I've been working on a case just now of a young lady who was killed in a car. He hit a lorry, you know, or the lorry hit him.
Mm-hmm.
And of course he was out in a split second almost, you might say. But of course there was all the terrible mess and all that and the ambulance, and he was clinging to himself, you know. They went in the ambulance with the body and the hospital and everything, the mortuary, and he couldn't sort of adjust himself to the idea that he was dead. It was a weird thing in a way, because he was still sort of clinging to the material things. And anyway, and then he went to his home and to his parents and clung there, you know, and of course they had only just heard the news and was a terrible upset there, naturally, and he was trying to bang on the table and trying to attract our attention and let them know it was all right, that he was there, but because they did not see him, and that made him furious. He got so cross, you know, and it seems odd to talk about a soul and it's out of the body getting annoyed or getting cross, but when people first come here, they're no different than what they were, you know, and in the body, and they still have the same outlook and same sort of idea. And he was furious because no one could see him or take any notice of him. He tried everything he could think of to attract attention, but of course he was no able to do anything spectacular which might have made them sit up and think. I mean, you get some of the souls that are able to move objects around the room or tilt a table up and down or do something crazy like that, you know, just to let people know. But he did not know how to do any of these things. He was just walking around, and he went to his funeral and everything, and all his friends, and tried to go to them and help them, you know, try to make him know what it's about, but didn't have enough effect, you know. Anyway, I was able to help him gradually to get away from things and change his outlook a wee bit. But he was very strong in the material sense. He was more of the earth than he was anything else. It took me quite a while to get him free.
How did you get through to him, Dave? How did you manage it?
Oh, I have my own methods, you know, but different souls on this side of that and that sort of capacity, they have, some have different methods, others, it's true, according to their own individual life and idea of things, and certain people need a certain way of being treated, and Well, I just went around with this boy. He didn't see me at first, of course, because he was so blind to anything of the spirit. He was so immersed in himself in material things. But gradually, when he began to feel, in a sense, lost, you know, he did not get anywhere with all his tantrums and bangings and one thing or the other and trying to attract attention. Then he began, no doubt, what I can gather anyway, and his mind seemed to change a wee bit. It's as if he sort of opened up, and then of course he became conscious of other things, and me in particular. And I was chummy and patty with him and talking to him and trying to make him see some sense. And I said, well, what's the point of you hanging around here, laddie? You'll not get anywhere. There's no one's going to take a mind, but I notice the best thing to do is to come with me, and I'll be able to help you a lot. And at that time I discovered too that he'd been very fond of an animal, a dog, and although he didn't know this at the time, he didn't realize, of course, when he'd been going to his parents' place, the dog was there, but he didn't cotton on to the fact. He didn't realize that although he could see the dog, he did not realize that the dog itself was a dead dog. He just couldn't appreciate that at all. He was sort of all caught up in the material side of things. Anyway, the dog followed him around too, trying to make himself sort of, you know, known, as it were, you know. And gradually, as the boy became more aware, and I was able to bring this dog to him, you know, to his consciousness, as it were, you might see, he began to realize that because the dog had died some few years previously, and that helped him in a way, because he was happy to be with the dog. And also then his grandparents, I was able to contact them, and they were able to make a link, and gradually he opened up his mind to things that were of the spirit. He was gradually loosening his hold on material things, and then I took him to a spiritualist meeting. I thought perhaps that might be some help in some way, if we could get through and sort of make a link, you know. Well, actually, I was able to manage to make a contact there with the medium, but he did not succeed in that. But anyway, he could see the possibility of getting through, getting over, you know, and that gave him a sort of a lift up a bit. But at the same time, he was still very suspicious and I think he was suspicious in the way of all sorts of things, apart from the mediums and that sort of thing. He didn't cotton on too easily to mediums, but he began to realize the possibility. But of course what annoyed him, I think, after that, he went to several places, and none of these mediums seemed to cotton on to him being there. He did not seem to see him, although he tried desperately to show himself And I think that made him a bit edgy and irritable, so I thought the best thing to do was not to play that at all, not to force that at all, you know, but to wait a while. Anyway, he's now very settled over here, and he's taken an interest in various things, things which on earth he did not do. As a matter of fact, I suppose, being so young too, he had no formative ideas, no strong sort of ideas about what he wanted to be. At least he didn't give that impression to me. He was rather, shall we say, quite happy to get in a car and go speeding around and all that sort of thing. I'm no surprised that he may have stayed that way, because in a way he's rather sticking his neck out. He was not the sort of deep thinking sort of person. Actually, he was rather a difficult case. And in a kind of way, he was his own enemy. He was not a bad lad, but at the same time, he was thoughtless and rather self-centered, and it took him a little time to get adjusted. But now he's making good headway, and he's taking a great interest in music and in art, and he's beginning to study and beginning to settle down and meeting interesting people, and he's beginning to form something, you know, of himself, you know.
Is he living with his relations?
He's with his grandparents, and his mother's now just about to come over, and I guess she'll be here very soon. I think that'll make him very happy too. Of course, you see, there again we come back to this time element. Time is nothing, it's an illusion. And I think that his mother, she, after he, you know, sort of had this accident, she lost all interest in life. I think this was sad too, in a way, but he'll be happy when she joins him, which will be any day, I suspect, now. But he's settled down, and he's very much happier, a very fine fella too, nice lad now. Much better, actually, than he was when he was on us, because he was the sort of boy who did not take much interest in anything or anybody on himself. His parents had done pretty well in a little business that I had, and, you know, they sort of spurred him, sent him to a good school and all that, gave him all the opportunities. And I think he was a rather selfish young man. There's no doubt about that.
David, I often think about these air crashes we have. People in the middle
sort of hang around the place. That's another kind of thing that's really bad. When you get these sort of things happening, it's always worse when people come like sudden like that, you know. It's very bad indeed. And we've had many of those cases. When there have been bad air crashes, you know.
Yes.
I've helped him with quite a number of instances like that.
Is that what happened to these men to be electrocuted or hanged? So that they actually thought, don't they?
You mean for punishment?
Yeah.
Well, that's bad too, because, well, that's in a wee worse, because often they have a resentment towards society, and sometimes they cling to earth, and they can be, some of them cling to earth for a very long time, and they can do a great deal of harm, and sometimes they impinge their thoughts and pinch themselves on a person on your side who probably in the normal way is quite a decent sort of person. Sometimes they even influence that person to do wrong things. There's no doubt about it that they do get souls who were certainly not very good people, and did some perhaps pretty bad things, and they don't necessarily change immediately, as you well know, and sometimes they get earthbound and cling to people. Indeed, quite a lot of mental asylums and places, there's a lot of earthbound spirits, mischievous and sometimes very bad spirits around people there who are weak-minded. As a matter of fact, there are crowds of souls on this side, doctors and people who specialize in helping mental patients on your side, trying to influence them for good, of course, and to help them to get mentally straightened out and get them physically fit and well. But we're always battling against the bad forces. We must always remember there are dangers, there are souls who are not necessarily always evil or anything like that, but who really can be very disastrously, you know, inclined, and sometimes do harm. We do what we can to get them away.
David, how do you get rid of a spirit who is possessed something? How do you get him out of the first and out of the first glory?
Well, that's a ticklish question. because we know why should you be sorry, because what may affect, you know, may be effective in one way with one person, may not be effective in another. There are various methods that are used, and there are various people on this side who specialize in dealing with cases of what you call obsession. But a great deal depends on the individual case. Usually we're successful, but there are cases, of course, where it's very difficult to remove the obsessing spirit, particularly when they take more or less complete possession. If it's only a kind of borderline case, it's not too bad. But sometimes it's really got complete control over someone else's physical body. It's a very, very difficult thing indeed. And there have been instances, of course, where people have gone through the rest of their life. The body has been obsessed by some other soul. This has been one of the worst things in the world, no doubt. You know, a lot of people in mental asylums are not mad in as much as they're not responsible. Sometimes they're obsessing spirits. And that's why you get these cases of people who are perfectly normal for a while, and then all of a sudden they start to do something which is irrational, and it's obvious that someone else is taking control. Actually, I think it's a pity that psychiatrists and people who deal with mental patients don't know more about possession, don't know more about this sort of thing, this subject which you know quite a bit. It would be a great help to them.
Yeah.
I think that they should know more about this, you know.
I once mentioned possession of the psychiatrist, and
don't look
at me, you think that would be a lot or something like that, you see.
They don't understand.
Yeah. What about suicides, David? I mean, they can be possessed too, can't they?
Oh, there are many instances, of course, where people have committed suicide when they've been under a bad influence. But of course, quite often, most suicides is due to the individual themselves.
Mm.
They get into a depressed, unhappy state. And in consequence, they take their own life, thinking to escape. Of course, they can't escape from themselves. That's the thing that people should be made to realize, that death doesn't necessarily mean an escape.
Right.
You still have to face up to yourself. You can never escape from yourself. Yourself is always there.
You have difficulty with them?
Sometimes.
Right.
You see, that's the trouble. Only as you do, quite rightly, naturally ask certain questions about whether it's suicide or obsession, it's very difficult to give a clear-cut answer, because what may apply in one instance or one case doesn't necessarily apply in another. Every individual case is an individual case in itself. Every person is not the same. The reasons for people being as they are not the same. The conditions, the circumstances are variable. What may apply in one case doesn't apply in another, you see.
Mm. That's interesting.
In fact, man, there must have been a lot of earthbound spirits there.
Well, of course, the whole condition around there is obsessed with, obsessed with spirits of all kinds, good, bad, and different. And the whole atmosphere is charged with forces which are very difficult sometimes to overcome. Those of us who act in the capacity of helping souls over, those who act in the way of trying to lift them out of the conditions, sometimes come up against great problems, great difficulties. There are so many souls there, around there, earthbound souls too, and the whole atmosphere around that part of the world, wherever there's intense hatred and fighting, and where there's all the evils that you might see of the earth let loose. Obviously the conditions are such that it's very difficult at times to pierce. Of course we do succeed, obviously, and we're able to help many people, but at the same time the conditions are good.
You must feel pretty dreadful when you have to enter
those
conditions.
Aye, but one sort of, accustoms oneself to it. It's one's work, and one loves to help people, and after all, the lower a person sinks, the greater is their need. More help is given.
Mm.
Of course, we cannot do very much until the individuals themselves begin to show a desire for assistance, a desire for guidance, a desire for help. It's the same with you people. With all your work that you do, with the best of heart and best of intention, you cannot make anyone accept something or reawaken or awaken an interest in something until they themselves are more or less ready for it.
Uh-huh.
People have got to be cooperative. In other words, unless they cooperate, there's not much that you can do about it. You can put the thing there right under their nose, but if they don't want to see it, then there's nothing you can do about it. You just can only do the best you can, and try not to get too depressed in the process. You're bound to get disillusionments and disappointments, but just think that one person that you helped and guided and made happy and given greater faith and confidence, then at least it's been worth it. In any case, you meet interesting people, you learn something about people anyway. Life is always interesting. There's no such thing as dullness where work of the spirit is concerned, believe me. I always feel that you do a remarkable work considering the many obstacles that you have one way and another. The tragedy, of course, is that often the people that you would have thought would have been a great help, you know, that would have cooperated with you, are often the people who put the obstacles up. Yeah. We find that too. You'd be surprised. We get all sorts of obstacles put in the way. And some of the people that we have to contend with, if we hadn't got a sense of humor, I don't think we could carry on. Unfortunately, I have a very good sense of humor. But we get some weird cases one way and another. You get some people who really, you think, you said, this man really is so stupid. You know, and people with so-called brains or intelligence one on earth, highly cultural types too, some of them, that you would have thought would have been very quick to learn, very quick to take into themselves new knowledge and experience, would be only too glad to be helped. Often they prove, sometimes anyway, very difficult to help.
You've probably got a one-track mind.
The religious ones are always the worst. I think their prejudice is so strong, and they're so concerned with themselves and their salvation, and they're so convinced that they're eventually going to be given a great reward. I think it's a great shock to them when they realize that the only reward they're going to have is what they've had to work down hard to get, and it can't be just had for the sake of saying, I believe in this, and there it is. You've got to work for it. There's nothing given away. It's a very interesting life. I'm very glad to know that I can do what I do. But the great joy of it is that one is living all the time, experiencing and meeting and encouraging and helping other people, and you're learning from them as they're learning from you. There's not a down moment. No one need fear dying. It's the greatest thing that happened to anyone. It'd be terrible to go on and on and on, and in the material sense, you know, sometimes it amazes me that some of these people who get scared, you know, of dying and just want to cling to the earth. One feels sad and sorry for them, but you know, they just don't realize what a wonderful future, what a wonderful life there is, what excitement, what interest, what wonderful things can be done and achieved, the new interests that they can have, and they can do all the things here that they may have wanted to do and couldn't do on earth. And there's no old age, no aches, no pains, only a complete and absolute freedom of spirit and of mind. Once you release yourself from your prejudices and the old ideas that hold you back, here there are no limits. Limitations. You can go as high as you like, but you have to go steady, you have to learn, feel your way. But there's never any feeling of frustration. If there is any frustration, it's that which you create within yourself. If your mind and your heart is open to receive truth and knowledge, then everything is there for you. It depends on you. You've got to make the effort, and you've got to do the digging. You know, you've got to lay the foundations before you can build a house.
David, what happens to people who have got the firm conviction when they die, well, they don't exist any longer? What sort of conditions do they come over in? What sort of
effect? Depends. Again, we mustn't generalize, but there are some who are soon reawakened, you know, to new thought, new ideas, and soon change their views and outlook. There are others who perhaps sleep, as you say. They're not sleeping in the sense that you call sleep, but in a kind of state where they have not a consciousness or awareness. And gradually, of course, things begin to dawn upon them and begin to realize things. It depends so much on the individual case, depends on the reasons why they are or think they are as they do. and the circumstances and the background and all sorts of things, mm-hmm. all these things can affect in the play. But invariably, most people anyway, if one talks in a general sense, most people, when they leave your side, soon readjust themselves, soon realize the new life that's there and the conscious of all the conditions and the surroundings and the peoples that are helping them and the loved ones that they've known in the past that are welcoming them over. In other words, the average person has nothing to fear. Indeed, no one has to fear, of course, really, in a sense, passing from your life to this. But to some extent, it depends on the individual. It's the kind of life which they find and the kind of setting which they create. I mean, everyone creates. That's another thing that people don't realize. To a great extent, indeed, it's true to say that you create for yourselves accordingly. If you think on the wrong lines, and if you have many prejudices, if your mind and heart is closed to truth, then obviously it's going to be more difficult. It's going to take longer. It's going to be harder for you to grasp things. But if you've got an open, free mind, if you have knowledge like you have before you come here, it's a great asset, a great blessing, and it will make all the difference to when you do come here. There's none of the drawbacks that so many people have. The worst drawbacks, I'm sure, right and seen, are the very strong prejudice ones. Have no prejudices, always have an open mind. Even with things that you're not sure about, just say, well, I don't know, and keep it in your mind if you can, but at the same time, never discard anything. Never sort of say to yourself, well, I don't want that, because there may be somebody including it somewhere. Point is, strike out for the highest that you can achieve. And if you fall a wee bit at times on the wee side, that's to be expected. At least you're having a wee rest and taking up a challenge again and struggling on. People have got to realize that there are many wees, there are many aspects, there are many roads. But the point is that some are long and wearisome and some are difficult and hard. And there's very, very rare and easy paths. But the truth, you learn a wee bit here and a wee bit there. And everyone can make some contribution. No one is so bad, no one is so good. There's every opportunity for every soul to find his own happiness and his own way, and on different levels of consciousness. We can't all be on the same level, on the same sphere, but we can all aspire, and it is through aspiration and making the attempt that we achieve what we do achieve. And I think that to have the knowledge that you have, the realization that you have, this is a great joy and a great blessing, and it helps many people, especially those who are sad and sorrowing, and those who are afraid. This truth will take the fear out of life and the fear out of death, and that's what really passed. Anyway, it's always a joy to talk to people like you, and I'll come again sometime to have me. Anyway, I must go now. But all the very best to you both now.
Thank you.
Goodbye, and God bless you.
Thank you for a lovely talk.
Thank you very much.
Bye-bye.
Thank you, Vicky, very much, Vicky.
See you on the 28th.